Okay, let's move on to our next time certain items. Carla, let me get you to read 1233 and 1234 together, please. Mm-hmm.
1233, create the Portland Street Fund and establish a non-residential transportation fee to fund Portland Street maintenance and transportation safety needs. 1234, establish a residential transportation income tax to fund Portland Street maintenance and transportation safety needs through the Portland Street Fund.
Okay, so let me queue up this work session with some opening comments, and then I know Commissioner Novick has some as well. First of all, we had an excellent public hearing on November 20th, about 5 hours of testimony. The choices, as I see them, remain the same three, but we did get some good ideas. The same three choices are in front of this council that have been in front of this council for many years, which is do this, do nothing, or do something else. I'm in favor of items one and three, but not item number two. And we've been doing that quite effectively for a very long time, and the results are obvious. The action we're going to take this morning is to take a look at these ordinances. I think there's some amendments about to be proposed that we're going to take up, and that therefore we'll take testimony on those amendments and move the items forward for final action later. First of all, there's an item on the council calendar, item number 1249, which will be referred back to Commissioner Novick's office because the contents of the proposed ordinance that's in item number 1249 are going to be brought forward as an amendment to one of the ordinances that we have in front of us. So that's a procedural change, not a substantive change. The question of a floor for spending that item 1249 was talking about is now going to be addressed by an amendment to item number 1233 rather than as a separate ordinance. So again, the question is going to be in front of the council today about a floor under the spending level, but it's going to be taken up as an amendment rather than as a separate item. So that's what's in front of us this morning. I'll turn it over to you, Commissioner, for some opening comments, and then we can call on staff to walk us through what's in front of us today.
I'll just briefly reiterate what we discussed the other week, which is that these proposals are both very different from what we came forward with last May. On the business side, we have a proposal that's largely the product of a lot of discussions between representatives of large and small businesses. This reflects their work. On the personal side, instead of a proposal where, as in our proposal in May, rich people and middle class people would have paid exactly the same amount for the most part, we now have a proposal that is more progressive, where rich people do pay more than middle class people. And also, because it's an income tax rather than a user fee, it is tax deductible on your state and federal tax forms.
Okay, thank you. So we have some revisions to city code in front of us in item 1233. That's the proposal to create a transportation code that establishes the street fund. As part of this, it will be creating a citizen oversight committee to monitor and ensure that the fund stays true to its mission, and that committee will provide annual reports to the council. In the ordinance, we'll also direct the Office of Management and Finance to establish a new sub-fund under the Transportation Operating Fund where this new revenue will flow. This sub-fund is additionally subject to an annual audit conducted by Moss Adams, who's our external auditor. Also in item 1233, we'll amend the existing revenue code because the revenue division will be the city agency that's charged with billing and collecting the transportation revenues. So again, those are the formal changes that will be affected by item 1233 if it's passed. In item 1234, we create a new revenue code to establish the residential transportation income tax. And as I think everyone knows, the Bureau has some additional documents that were distributed on Tuesday. Celia Heron is here to explain those changes and to walk everyone through the amendments. So Celia, Mark, good morning.
All right. Good morning. Celia Heron with the Office of Management and Finance, working with PBOT on the street fee. And actually, since the documents were amended yesterday and distributed, we have one more minor amendment, and so we need to distribute those.
Okay.
And I can
walk
show
us
you
through,
absolutely.
Walk everybody through
and we
what
have
those
copies
cover.
For the public as well. So while those are being distributed, and they're color-coded to make it a little easier to follow along, There are essentially two policy issues that are being addressed by these amendments. One is, as Commissioner and Charlie, the mayor, were saying, setting a floor for spending, right. So what we call the maintenance of effort. And so in the first amended ordinance, which is the document that is slightly different than yesterday, there's language that talks about while the Portland Street Fund is in place, and you've got the words in front of you, there'll be the changes to the we'll continue to fund the street preservation budget, and the additional language was the general transportation revenue budget, to be clear about the number we're talking about.
Yeah, let me read that language just so people hear it. It says, for so long as the Portland Street Fund program is in effect, the city shall spend no less from sources other than the amount collected through the Portland Street Fund than the street preservation general transportation revenue budget allocated in fiscal year 2014-2015. So in other words, we do this work now at a certain level, not enough, but at a certain level, based on funds that we already receive from the state and federal government through gas taxes, parking revenues, everything else. This says that base continues and the new funds are on top
right.
of that.
And I think that was...
Just to clarify a point about that, what this amendment says is not that we will spend the same amount from PBOT general transportation revenues. What this says is that it's an obligation of the city as a whole to continue to spend the same amount that is now coming from general transportation revenues, even if general transportation revenues collapse.
Right.
Right.
Good point.
Right. So it does, in fact, set the floor.
Okay.
So is there a reason why we don't actually say the number? What is the amount?
The amount is 11.318812. It's 11.3 million. And some change.
So would we
friendly
amendments add that? Because otherwise somebody in 2 years' time is going to be trying to look that up.
We could do that. We sort of went back and forth about this the other day, actually, is like, does it make sense to put a dollar amount in a statute? But if that's council's will, I don't think we have any objection.
Put it in parentheses, right?
Yeah, this won't be included in city code. It will be it's a policy statement.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay. It's a council directive. We can direct a number as well as words. If that's clearer, then clarity is one of the goals here. I'm fine with that as long as you are, Commissioner.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
Makes sense to you? Mm-hmm. Okay. So let's assume that we will put that dollar amount in the language of that amendment.
Great. Thank you. All the other documents, the only amendment relates to adding a sunset provision. And so in the different sections of city code that we create, in the transportation code and in the two sections of revenue code, we add language that says this will sunset, will basically not be in effect in the tax years starting on or after January 1, 2021. So that's
And this that. Is one of the issues that got raised frequently during
the public hearing. There was a lot of concern about that, and so...
This is a sunset for both the residential and the non-residential?
Yes.
Okay.
All right. Keep going, and maybe you've covered it.
Well, I can walk you through where in each of those places, but the only changes in each of those has to do with the sunset. So if you look at Exhibit A, your blue Exhibit A.
Actually, ours aren't color-coded, so.
They aren't. Oh, well, all right then. Well,
unless I'm just not.
My apologies. If you look at Exhibit A, yeah. It starts out Portland City Code 702-100.
Yeah.
If you go to the second page of that, and so you're looking at Chapter 702, subsection 570, non-residential transportation fee. The last sentence in that first paragraph states the non-residential transportation fee will end for all tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2021.
Right.
And Celia, just to clarify, for most individuals, that means that the calendar year 2020 is their last year. But there's
Correct.
Some people and businesses that have different tax years, so that's why we've got the language that might look kind of odd.
Right, exactly. Moving on to Exhibit B, the next page, Portland City Code 1721 on the Portland Street Fund. If you go to the second page of that, the eagle eye will notice there's a new provision, 1721 subsection 100, sunset provision. And this has to do with the fact that when the Portland Street Fund ends, there'll be still some collections going on because they would have been earned during that time, but this will close it down once the receipts coming in are basically de minimis. So that's the the sunset language for the code there.
The Revenue Bureau gave us some sort of tax compliance history and explained that, like, for the Multnomah County iTax, returns were dribbling in for years after it officially sunsetted.
Right. And then moving on to the other Exhibit A, which is for item 1234, the second page, section 576.030, effective dates. There's a new second sentence that says the residential transportation income tax will end for tax years beginning on or after January 1, 2021. And then some minor edits in the second paragraph that, again, talk about the termination, the sunsetting. And again, this is language between revenue and the city attorney to close it down.
Okay.
And those are the nature, those are the only changes from what you discussed and the public discussed last
week. All right, I've got a couple questions. Maybe there are others as well. So there were other items that were mentioned in public testimony that I believe, there's public testimony about whether we should do this or not. Mm-hmm. Or do something else instead. I understand that argument. But then there were also points brought up about whether at a technical level we've gotten some things right or not. And Mr. McAuliffe's here to talk about large transportation firms. There was a question about large medical institutions. I assume that there is, if these ordinances are passed, that there's still rulemaking to do in terms of how the bureaus, both transportation and revenue, will calculate the business fee for a given business or institution, right? So, and it's not all dictated by ordinance. In other words, I think we don't have to complete the work on making those repairs to how it affects an individual taxpayer in the ordinance. But I want to check on that fact.
Well, Mr. Mayor, I think actually, I mean, one thing the Revenue Bureau is going to have to do is make sure that businesses are appropriately classified
in the
different categories.
Yeah.
And that's something I don't know if we even need separate administrative rules to address that.
Yeah, so how does that work get done, Thomas, particularly since that'll be your role here?
I'm Thomas Lanham. I'm the director of the Revenue Division. That's correct. We would need to promulgate some administrative rules, in particular regarding the categories of businesses and making sure that we've got definitions that both make sense and that are tight and clear. So there would be a number of administrative rules would be promulgated as a result of both of the code changes.
Okay. And that's done through OMF under your direction?
That's correct.
Okay. Just wanted to make sure that we knew how that those people want answers to those questions, and the answer isn't necessarily that it's in the ordinance. But you have authority, as you already do in dealing with business income tax revenue, to write definitions and put businesses in certain categories based on those definitions.
Right. So both for the residential income tax and for the business fee, there's existing code authority in the revenue division to do just that, to implement administrative rules to satisfy disputes, appeal processes, penalties, interest, all those structures, right down to due dates. So you may recall we needed to adjust the arts tax due date a few years ago. We made that adjustment in administrative rules, and it was very quick and easy to do that.
Good. Thank you. Other questions?
I just have a procedural sort of housekeeping matter. So you'll be moving to put the amendments on the table and then take testimony today.
Correct.
And then your intention is to bring both ordinances back for a final vote next week?
Next week or the week after, which is the...
Well, Commissioner, that brings me to a point that I was going to mention shortly, which is that... at least on the non-residential side, I actually think we'll be cooking up another amendment over the next week. Because although I do not read as many constituent emails as Commissioner Fritz does, I do read some. And one of the themes that we've heard periodically over the past several months is we've heard from people who own their own businesses and are residents of the city saying that they're concerned about being taxed twice, both as residents and as business owners. And my response to that has generally been, if you own a separate business, then you're probably generating more traffic than if you simply live here. So I thought that it makes sense to have fees for businesses even, you know, owned by Portland residents. However, in recent days, we've gotten some emails from people who run very, very small businesses. In particular, Tom and Jane Staugus have been emailing with me, and they said that they have a tiny business, which based on our current schedule, they'd be paying $15 a month, which would be a significant portion of their overall revenue. So we are taking a look right now at doing kind of a fix for that, whether we can come up with some language that addresses the special circumstance of very small and perhaps particularly home-based businesses. So that means that we will wind up postponing a final vote, and we'll get you specific language as soon as possible.
So, Commissioner Novick, this may go back to May, or I forget what hearing we got a lot of testimony on a related point, but I'm interested not only in that fix, which we have not, you and I have not really discussed any length, and also the suggestion that some had that perhaps below a certain threshold, we would exempt certain businesses in year one, that is the startup years of very small businesses that were sort of on the bubble. So as part of this discussion, I would welcome a chance to talk to you about that piece as well as the fix that you're looking at.
We will arrange to speak expeditiously.
There might be a size threshold that solves both problems. I don't know.
There might be.
But
one is, and it seems to me, one is a year one issue, one is a structural issue. But they both get at the same point, which is there are some small businesses that in year one in particular are vulnerable and have cash flow issues. And so we want to minimize the impact on them below a certain threshold.
And is that above, speaking of thresholds, is that above the threshold of what you can do by rule?
That would be, yes, because we're going to establish the effective tax year in the code. So that would be something that would need to be an amendment to the city code.
Well, I look forward to having that conversation.
Okay.
I think
so,
if that gets done,
it has to get done by amendment here, not by rulemaking there.
So just so I'm clear, we will not be voting on this next week. We may be taking amendments next week or the following week.
We may.
Okay. So we'll need to continue it to next week in case you do develop that amendment, and we can consider that amendment then.
And then
move it to second reading on the 17th.
By the way, we're on the subject of things that we will not do today. I just wanted to add that, I mean, I think we've said this publicly before, but Mr. Romaine and others have raised the question, could we apply the income tax on the residential side to, in effect, commuters, to people who work here and earn income here but do not live here. So we will be bringing forth a resolution next week directing the Revenue Bureau to examine the legal and practical feasibility of that option. It's something that examination is something that can't be done overnight, but we're committed to asking them to do that. That'll be a separate resolution.
And Mayor, I need to state that I'm sure some folks are wondering what we're doing here, and what we're doing is making law in a very public way with a lot of discussion before the cameras so that people can know. Some will say that it's a moving target, and I would say that, in fact, what's happening is that we're responding to public testimony, both the testimony at the hearing and what we're hearing in person and by email. So to me, this is an excellent public process that is very transparent, and citizens' comments are making a difference, particularly the ones, as Commissioner Novick pointed out, that are giving specific examples and suggesting particular changes. Those are more helpful than the ones that just say, just let us vote. As I said at the hearing, we may certainly have a vote one way or another. The question is on what? And so I encourage folks to continue engaging with the council and giving us your feedback, because it's obvious that this, all of us are working very hard to try to find the best possible proposal that then when the final vote comes, we will say this is the proposal and then see what happens after that.
Commissioner, following up on that, I just want to give another shout out to Tom and Jane Staugus, because they didn't just say we think that this proposal treats us unfairly. They had a very specific suggestion as to how to address it, which I don't know if practically we'll be able to do exactly what they suggested, but it certainly was a reasonable suggestion. So as the commissioner said, we do listen to constituent feedback, and sometimes constituents have not just complaints, but excellent ideas of how to fix them.
Okay, further questions for staff? So then what we'll need to do at this point is have a motion to adopt the amendments, put them on the table, and then we'll take public testimony on the amendments. So is there a motion?
So moved.
Second.
Further discussion on putting the amendments on the table? Then a roll call on that, please, Carla.
Novick?
Aye.
Fritz?
Aye.
Fish?
Aye.
Saltzman?
Aye.
Hales.
Aye. Okay, so that's what's before us today. Thank you all. We obviously might have more questions. So now let's start with public testimony. And again, we want to ask you to speak to the amendments. Many of you were here for a long discussion about the threshold question of what we should do. But while we are working on these ordinances, we'd like your thoughts about whether these amendments improve them or make them worse, in your opinion, or whether there are other amendments that we should consider. So with that, if you got a sign-up sheet, I'm sorry.
Let me just restate the amendments so that we're clear on what we're requesting testimony. The one is the sunset, and the other is establishing the baseline for the funding for transportation from other sources will be no less than this year. And we'll put the number of about $11 million into the language next week.
Okay, thank you. Good. Okay, you have a sign-up sheet, Carla?
I do. We have about 11 people signed up.
Okay.
The first three, please come on up, are Craig Rogers, Richard Denon, I believe it is, and Bob Clark.
Good morning. Craig, I think you managed to be the first testifier at the last hearing. Congratulations.
There's thrills and comes to sign up early.
He might live in this building. Good morning, Mr. Rogers. Go ahead.
My name's Craig Rogers, Mayor, Commissioners. A little bit of my history is that I spent 35 years sitting at the bargaining table negotiating contracts between Coca-Cola and Teamsters. Learned a lot. Protective language, the enforcement. Words are very important. As an example, there's a big difference between maybe or will be in a contract. And you asked me, Charlie, to take a look at the Oversight Committee. And from my experience, I'll say it's a fox guarding a hen house. It's really wide open. It's kind of like the Wild West that, with regards to protective language and enforcement, you know, we need people who have experience with finance, people who perhaps have engineering background to set on this. And just moving along, that I see some real problems with the Oversight Committee. I think it's taken lightly, and yet it's not like they need to be running around putting out fires all the time. There just needs to be some leverage there to get people to do the right thing.
So let me stop you just for a second, make sure I understand. You don't think we're specific enough about the qualifications of that committee?
Correct.
Okay.
Correct.
All right, good. Thank you.
And actually, I'll see how fast I can read this. I'm sorry.
That's okay. Go ahead. I interrupted.
Okay. Oversight in management jargon is equated with supervision in the sense of being a general review of institutional performance with particular attention to failures to carry out mandates, to preserve discipline, to inefficiency and poor productivity. Oversight is performed by bodies, units, and processes that provide supervision and watchful care to an organization. Through its fundamental elements of audit, evaluation, monitoring, and inspection, investigation, oversight helps an organization to enhance its effectiveness, productivity, and integrity. Now, on the sunset provision, am I correct, and I hope I'm wrong, is that it just takes a vote, a city council at the end of this, and then it's all done again. We get right into it. Or does this absolutely... So see,
that's correct. It's ordinance. We can't pass an ordinance that binds a future council in a way that they couldn't unpass.
Well, you know, at the very beginning of this, one of your staff people said, when I said what we need is some hard language here, written in word, and we don't want to tie the hands of future city councils. Well, what about our hands? Because, see, you're tying our hands by thinking that this thing, and you've said here, it can just basically go on forever.
No, there's a sunset, so there's a stop date.
But you can just renew it.
But there would need to be a public hearing, a public process. You folks would engage.
But there's no vote of the people.
Right.
Okay, that's all I have to say, because what I'm watching here is democracy die at the level of city council in Portland. Democracy is dying in this city, and I'm witnessing it.
All right,
I attended all those meetings during the summer.
We
it's been
have
a real show.
We and future councils can refer things, but we can't bind a future council to refer something. So we can put a sunset provision on it, and then they will have that choice. of do they reenact this because the revenue is still needed?
Correct.
Do they repeal it because the revenue is not still
needed? You don't
want
to tie their hands, but you'll tie ours.
Well, we make actions. We take action here. Thank you. Okay, go ahead.
Hi, I'm Richard Donan, just a concerned citizen. I was here back in November. And I have one question, because you have stated that you're looking for positive input that is constructive, and if not this, then something else. Well, I presented, and each of the council people received my email, or at least my email said it was received, regarding a parking sticker permit. And my objection to what's going on currently is that it's so complicated. You have so many tiers and levels of income tax for this group, reduced income tax for another group. PERS people aren't going to pay, which includes me, and those who are on fixed incomes. You're creating a huge edifice, which is going to be bulky to deal with. You're going to need increased people to deal with it in the Revenue Bureau. And I think that my whole purpose here is to create a simple process, which other municipalities in America have been using for their street fee. Why hasn't that at least been spoken of openly in council rather than me having to attend the meetings to bring this up? So if I could hear from each of the commissioners and the mayor, why, you know, is there a reason why you haven't looked at this thoroughly?
Well, we did, after your suggestion, yeah.
We actually have looked at it, and there's two issues, one of which seems to be insurmountable. One is that in order for this parking sticker, this vehicle sticker thing to work for everybody who comes into the city, we would need to significantly expand parking enforcement because we need to send people not only onto the street but into private garages in order to get all of the cars. And I don't know, maybe it would be very expensive, and I don't know what our jurisdiction is. The more difficult point to overcome is that state law gives counties the sole authority to impose vehicle registration fees. And we had our city attorney take a look at the law that does that and see if it would preempt us from doing a vehicle sticker, which looks a lot like a vehicle registration fee. And our city attorney responded that there would be a very good argument that we are preempted by state law as the city from having a vehicle sticker.
Did they contact the city of Chicago to see how they work with that program?
Well, I don't
program?
Think, I mean, the city of Chicago is the state of Illinois, which has different state law. My assumption is that Illinois doesn't have the same kind of law limiting to counties the ability to have something like vehicle registration fee.
Yeah, but that's an assumption. That's not fact.
It does it, but whatever Chicago does, it doesn't change what our state law is.
Right. Well, I understand that.
That was the problem, yeah, that the Oregon legislature has been pretty specific about transportation revenues. Gas taxes have to go to roadways.
Unfortunately,
they were also pretty specific about this. So absent a change in state law, we don't think we could implement that idea.
So the ORA statutes that deal with parking that I handed out, that I had researched.
Yeah, it's not so much the parking statutes, it's the vehicle registration. This would be construed as a registration system.
By
can I just ask a question of Commissioner Noah, because he shared this view in a briefing with me the other day. Is there a way around the legal bar by engaging the county and see whether they're interested in partnering with us on this?
Well, I think that they wouldn't just have to partner. They would have to pass the vehicle sticker ordinance. And I don't know that there is that much appetite in the county commission for taking over what we've been doing here for the last year and taking on themselves the responsibility for funding transportation.
And the other question is there a legislative fix? Because in my mind, while I think the legal advice we've been given is sound, in my mind there is something analytically different between a sticker for this purpose that has been suggested by some folks and a vehicle registration fee, since a vehicle registration fee usually accompanies an inspection and affects the privilege to drive. We can't condition this in terms of the privilege to drive, but we can. What we're thinking about is as a revenue source, which I think is slightly different than a vehicle registration fee.
I think that
I'm just asking.
I think that would be a heavy lift, and there, which would obviously postpone our taking action until the legislature took that action. And again, it would require a significant additional investment in enforcement in order for this to work. And also, a vehicle registration fee or vehicle sticker fee is exactly the kind of a flat, non-income-based proposal that we brought forward in May, and I think it would be subject to the same objection from homeless advocates and others who object to something that's not based on income.
Yes, I was going to add that the third real reason to that's challenging to look at that sticker program is that I would only support it if there was some kind of low-income exemption, and that then gets us back into the realm of the things we've been discussing.
My point was...
It doesn't matter whether you have a Cadillac or a...
Right. Baby. No, I agree. But my point was is that if you have an oversight committee that can look at compliance with the sticker, and it is a parking sticker, it's not a DMV sticker, it's not for the whole state of Oregon, it's strictly for the folks that drive into Portland. So it's a parking sticker, not unlike the folks that are on Sabi Island or any of the other parking permits that are in the city of Portland already. You already have jurisdiction to charge people in Portland a sticker fee or a sticker permit to park in Industrial Southeast and Southwest around what used to be PGE Park. Mm-hmm. That's what this would basically piggyback on top of. So it would not have anything to do with vehicle registrations. It's just that perhaps if somebody was going through DEQ and they were there for sale, they could buy them there, but they could buy them at any retail outlet. It has basically nothing to do with the law dealing with vehicle registration. And yes, this is just an opening salvo. This is not the answer for the problem of how to fix our streets.
We have looked into that pretty extensively. I know that having been part of the Northwest parking permit discussions and various other permit areas, the purpose of those permits is to regulate parking, and they're not revenue generators. The city doesn't profit. And when they do, they put back the money into the program. So it would take a lot of, I mean, if you think about doing a permit program in every neighborhood in the city, that'd be far more enforcement staff required that would then cost money and take it away from the transportation improvements.
Can I just test so that you're, because I just want to understand something, because mm-hmm. I remember back in 2004, a candidate for city council suggested that we put a surcharge on parking downtown to fund other worthy purposes. So, as your fallback position that I'm not advocating your position one way or another, but mm-hmm. is your fallback position that you think we should put a surcharge on parking in the areas we can and use that money to cover roads?
If that works, if that's going to generate enough funds to repair this road,
well, it's
roads
aggressive
and
it may not work, but I'm just trying to get a sense of what you're pitching.
As again, what I'm saying is this is just to begin a conversation and an alternative to an income tax, which I find a little problematic dealing with what the issue of me providing you with my federal income tax and just the security issues that bother me. I was looking for something that was simple, that works elsewhere, and that could meet the needs, or at least the beginning needs, to repair the roads over the funds that you currently get.
I really appreciate you putting some thought into this. We'll continue to probe the legal issue because you've raised some more good questions here. So we always ask our city attorneys at least twice if we're trying to make something new happen. So
yeah, I'm not an attorney.
No, well, I'm not either, but that's why we ask them hard questions. So I appreciate you really putting thought into this and coming up with an original idea, and we'll keep testing it and seeing if there's a legal way to do it.
Thank you.
Appreciate it.
Hi. Well, Bob Clark, we spoke a while ago. And as to the amendments, the overall picture is that...
Before you get started, we require people to say if they are speaking on behalf of an organization. And you send very thoughtful testimony, but you always close it by saying that you're a volunteer with the Taxpayer Association of Oregon. And just out of respect, I want to make sure we always know whether you're speaking as you, the individual, or Taxpayer Association of Oregon, or both. so that you don't run afoul of any of the disclosure rules.
Oh, yes, I'm speaking for both.
Okay, good.
Thank you.
The amendments have to be looked at in a relative sense, in that you are going to be putting like lipstick on the proverbial pig called the street income tax. And I call it that because it's very intrusive in that you're requiring hundreds of thousands of folks to file their income tax filings now with the city. And I know that was one of the things that irked me about the Multnomah iTax was doing that extra thing and divulging more of your personal information to more government. And whereas we have existing mechanisms of the gasoline tax, and also I reiterate that the city's finances are improving and that they should be able to fund a lot of these safety projects that were listed there in the documents. And I mean, we're talking $1 million here and $1 million there. I mean, we have noise in the budget that's $1 million here or there. So I reiterate that the budget itself, I think, will over time fulfill a lot of these safety projects that you have ending in 6 years. As to the amendments, the sunset is really not too effective. It's like the lobster, and you take and put in your pot and put it on simmering heat. At first, you come back after 6 minutes and say, "How you doing, lobster?" And the lobster says, "Well, I first was feeling kind of faint, but now I think I'm adjusted." And then you say, "Well, I'll just keep the simmering going on here and take care." And that's the analogy. After 6 years, that's what the council, everybody's kind of adjusted to the pain of this new thing. And they just keep it going. And as to the level of your funding, it doesn't take account of the growth that will occur in those general funds or in the PBOT funding that is currently existing. So you can give an absolute amount, but it's going to be growing, and so that could be diverted as well.
Why would that be growing? I'm sorry. It's coming from state and federal gas taxes, which are frozen at a fixed level. So why would it be growing?
The state gasoline tax has got a very good chance of being lifted up.
So if they raise the tax at the state level.
Right, and I doubt if the federal gets done, but there's also vehicle registration fees that can be upped, I think.
I think those are down also. But
there's, like I said, the price of gasoline is down, and it's probably going to be down for a while.
Sure.
Because it goes through these long-term cycles of 10 to 15 years. And then you'll see increase. Already people are going to the SUVs instead of buying the hybrids or the smaller cars that they were.
So I've heard.
So you're going to have growth in that fund, and so you're not really you're letting that growth go away.
Thank you. Well, by the way, if you want to check, you talked about our fortunes improving. Our city economist, who works for Andrew Scott, who's in the back of the room there, he can email you the document, but has done a forecast for the general fund, which shows very modest improvement over the next few years, primarily due to a better business climate and rising property values.
Right.
I don't know if we've specifically done a forecast for state and federal gas tax revenues that flow to the city, but again, they have to raise that.
Yeah,
tax.
I know, but we were surprised this year with the $10 million act.
That was one-time money.
But these are recurring on a regular basis.
Right. Now, they've got a forecast for that as well. So we do have a forecast for what we think the general fund.
Yeah, I also note that the COLA for the city is about the cost of living adjustment is like 2.7%, and the rest of the, like, retirees are getting 1.5% at most, and federal employees, they went several years without even an increase. And most of these people we're talking about are, like, making six figures in total compensation. And so, I mean, if you're going to give them almost 3% increase in an inflation environment of 1.5%, I think you're being over-generous in your COLA benefit.
Okay. Thank you. Thanks very much.
You're welcome.
Next three.
Next three are Robert McCullough, Ann Sanderson, and Mr. Lightning.
Good morning.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. Thank you very much for the opportunity to come. I'll be very brief today.
Oh, just put your name in the record, Robert.
Sorry. Sorry, I'm so inexperienced testifying. Robert McCullough, President, Southeast Uplift, 6123 Southeast Street, College Place. Thank you. I'll be very brief today. Several items. The first is a rising tide rises all ships. The discussion at Southeast Uplift on Monday had some doubts about the precision of the minimum, mainly concerned about choosing a already low year as a base. We are certainly concerned about the issue of the sunset. As you know, I have Don Gardner advising me on many things. He knows more than I do. And he reminds me that we've had many funding mechanisms for transportation, all of them promised and all of them eventually removed, which leads us to today's underfunding. But I'm also going to cheat very quickly and raise a couple of other issues. Southeast Uplift did take a formal position for a public vote on Monday. That's a first for us. We had raised the issue as a potential if you didn't meet certain conditions on documentation and policy. Eastmoreland, not surprisingly, also has that position, though I think we'll be blamed more on the income tax than anything else, and that, by the way, is not correct. Somewhat more to the news that some of you may not know is we started litigation on the Oregon public document law on Friday. We filed with the Multnomah District Attorney. That's the first step. That gives us 7 days. On Friday, we'll be filing with the court. Now, this applies to the question of errors in the calculation. Your own documents show there are no large transportation companies or agencies in the city. That's your document, not ours. We requested the work papers for that 30 days ago. We've now received them. We've now had a temporizing response from Mr. Rivera that explains it will be massively difficult to answer these questions and probably violate secrecy. As you all know, this is nothing new in public documents. They've not contacted us to refine the request. We have no desire for anyone's secret documents. We do know that this is an area which changes every number in the proposal. It cannot be fixed by the staff. Every number is currently wrong.
Mr. McCullough, what do you mean by every number is currently wrong? Because what happened was the work group came up with a structure where businesses were divided into different groups and then divided into different sizes and said that businesses of X group and X size would pay X amount. So what does that mean? That was their choice as to how to allocate responsibility among businesses. So how can that be wrong in an objective sense?
Well, number one, I disagree with you that we have signed off on this, and you should direct that question to Ms. Sanderson, who was on the committee. As you remember, we were not invited, and that is a public policy issue.
They said the work group, and I understand that Ms. Sanderson didn't like the result, but we have not heard objections from, for example, the Portland Business Alliance and Venture Portland, which represents small businesses.
Okay, now we're discussing public involvement. The primary avenue of public involvement in Portland is the neighborhood associations. I think I heard that once from Commissioner Fritz. But we were not invited. None of us were invited. You did not come talk to us.
You could have come to any of the numerous public meetings that we had on this topic. My question for you
is, we do have members who did.
Given that the allocations of particular businesses are based on that formula that came out of the work group discussions, how can a calculation be, quote, wrong?
Okay, I've talked to you and your staff quite a bit. Let me walk through that calculation. I apologize, Commissioners, this will be longer than my presentation.
That's right. We asked you a question and you get to answer.
The first step was to divide the bill into two. It was done arbitrarily, half to residents, half to commercial. That's actually the wrong number. That isn't actually the way we do transportation in Portland. It's more 60-40. Accept it. After that, then you broke it into a number of different business categories. We've heard many times that was done on the basis of trips. Now, I'm quoting directly from your staff here. In fact, I can bring you the emails on this directly from your staff. In fact, you've seen them. You were copied.
Mr. McCullough, it was
please don't interrupt because you asked a question. Let me answer. One of the problems about arguing with an expert witness is they're so darn stubborn. So at that point, they were divided according to trips and entities. The entities were taken from the Portland Business License Database. The trip counts were taken from the ITE manual. Both of those are public, even though Mr. Rivera now says secrecy prevents you from answering. Okay, so let's take a look at the number of entities. The number of entities is taken from the Portland Business License. The Portland Business License Database has never been audited for this purpose. One very amusing story, and this is very simple. The Portland Oregonians entry in the Portland Business License is for the agent for sports and political figures. Willamette Week is actually recorded as a newspaper. The Union Pacific Railroad is not counted as a railroad. Your own staff commented to me that TriMet, one of our largest institutions in transportation, wasn't included at all because they didn't have a business license. So that 1.9% allocated to that category was wrong. Now that means that if you had put in the correct number, which was probably something on the order of 20%, that'd be the number of vehicles, 40% the amount of fuel, 5 to 7% employment or revenue, you would have reduced the allocation to all those other categories.
So, Robert, it was quite, we started off with a recommendation last May that was based on trips. And there was information relevant to that that was provided to the work group at the beginning. But it was quite clear over the summer that we were moving away from allocations based on trips. We all now understand that we do not have a trip-based mechanism. So it's not that we said we're going to have a trip-based mechanism and this is the product of that. We all knew that we were deliberately moving away from a trip-based mechanism.
Unfortunately, Commissioner Novick, you may not be correct because the information provided in numerous occasions is that the allocation between categories had a component from, quote, this is direct quote, and Fred Mark's here, I think, if we want to pull him on up to ask, the ITE manual. Number two, on that, I have a direct quote from, again, your own staff, that they went to the business license database to get the number of entities. Now, bear in mind, the reason why you're going to be in court defending the secrecy of this information is because we would like to see that number. Not interested in anyone's secret data, absolutely not. If you look at our request, we've not asked for any secret data. But you and I, very well-educated, very intelligent people who have exchanged, what, 50 emails on this subject, still do not know the right answer. And I respect you a lot for talking to me as much, but that we could debate this question at this late date is evidence that you should turn over that calculation. If you're correct, Southeast Uplift will apologize.
Robert, the staff is trying to figure out how to give you as much as possible without releasing confidential business information. But I do want to say that if we are going to be making sure that businesses are assigned to the proper categories, and the schedule the work group came up with said transportation businesses of such and such size pay such and such an amount. So if we identify a transportation business that has been misclassified, then under that schedule, they will pay the amount consistent with their category and their size.
However, you're confusing two different steps in the calculation. The first was to derive that table, which, by the way, is now part of the legislation. It's actually included in the legislation. The staff can't change it. That is, in fact, the monthly amount that will be charged. That monthly amount appears to be an error because we dropped off, among others, TriMet, the major trucking companies, the major railroads, the Port of Portland. That allocation is in error. Now, we can solve this problem immediately, Steve. As you know, Mark Lear promised the work papers literally 1 month ago. We have only received a response from your office last night after the close of business. We reviewed it. We will have a formal response later today. A judge will probably have to rule on this. But the best move is much better. Let us simply delete any data you think is secret. Delete every piece of secret data. Bear in mind, I submit a business tax, a rather large one, and I know exactly what can be deleted. Income is fine. No interest in that. No interest in balance sheet. None of that shows up in your spreadsheet, and we just get to the bottom of the answer. Okay,
let me let the commissioner finish this.
One more. The work group came up with a construct where no business location will pay less than X amount. They said 120. We've now talked about 144. So the only way your complaints would have significant relationship to what any business is charged is if there are thousands of misclassified entities that now are paying, say, $20 and would now pay $144. How many large transportation businesses do you think there are in the city?
Number of transportation with over 50 employees, quite a few. But I don't know because, again, you haven't responded to
you
our open document report.
You think that it's thousands?
Let me ask you both to end this here. First, I appreciate you having this debate publicly. Two, I want to request that maybe the commissioner let us know what the results are of the discussion with the Bureau about what can be released to you when, because you've got a request and you've got the prerogative of saying yes, no, or hear some of it. But more importantly, Thomas, I think, is still in the room. I would like us, you don't need to come up, Thomas, but just want to flag the question of, do we need to move the threshold in the ordinances of what's addressed by rule versus what's addressed in the ordinance itself? It may be the case that this kind of technical debate will occur after it's enacted as well as before. My preference would be to have as much ability to tune this thing by rule as possible. Obviously, the council has an oversight responsibility, so will the oversight committee. But this kind of, in tax policy, it's not unusual to have an argument, a technical argument. And I suspect we're not done after this morning. So the question is, where will we have them and how? And I'm open to a suggestion, or at least taking a look at the question of where these issues get resolved downstream. I appreciate you two having this debate now, and we want to hear the results of it. But the question is, 6 months, a year from now, are we going to still be doing this in council, or is it going to be done before a hearings officer at the Revenue Bureau? I don't know.
May I make one sentence, please?
Sure.
Southeast Uplift supports you strongly. We do not want to litigate. If we can solve this in the next few days, call me. I have 30 years of experience in public document requests. We can solve the legal question immediately, and we will move on, and we will not waste any of the city's money and time.
Okay.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. Appreciate that. Good morning. Welcome.
Good morning. My name is Ann Sanderson. I'm a small business owner. I'm a founder of the Stop Portland Street Fee Facebook page, and I was a member of one of the summer work groups, although every time you say it, Commissioner Novick, I cringe. The rates and the policies that have come out of that group ostensibly really came from your staff, which are hardworking people, and I really appreciate all that they've done. But there was no sign-off, and I really would appreciate if you stopped blaming us for even rates that you quote that aren't ours. But here we are again after 6 months, and among the work groups, the town halls, the open houses, and all the public testimony, we're still addressing changes. And I'd submit that this, both taxes now, two of them, are not ready for prime time. If we're discussing it a week before that your potential vote, and even 2 weeks before, you haven't worked out the bugs. And to say that there wasn't any kind of pushback on the business license fee is wrong, because now you're already making changes on it. So I think that, you know, we're not ready for prime time. And if the roads are like teeth, it's like pulling teeth to get you to get any changes. I am heartened by the changes that you're talking about today, but they're significant, and we need to study them more, and we need to have a chance to respond to them as well. So we came here to talk about a sunset clause, although we have gotten off track, and I think it's in a step in the right direction. But, you know, we're not confident that a future city council won't want to continue that, even if there are problems with it in the meantime. But a sunset is better than no sunset, and it's still not enough. You're asking us for a blank check. You can raise it at any time. And I think we need to be more sure of what you want to do before that happens. So before you take the money from us, I think we need to talk about the criteria that you're using, because a survey to decide that it's 50-50 or between residents and businesses, or that it's this amount of money because a survey said, it's not good enough. We need to use some common sense to determine what really a good plan what would be. And some of the things we need to talk about, the sunset, finally, thank you for that. But also, any plan needs to have lower administrative costs. A 25% administrative cost is just not enough. One of the things that did actually organically come from the work group that I was on was skin in the game. We talked about that phrase as a way to have more general fund dollars, not PBOT dollars, but general fund dollars going into PBOT in a ratio that would actually mean something. You know, you guys decide what's a priority, and if you are saying that this is a priority to you, then you need to show us. So finally, I'm going to say about a vote on this. I think that there's been a lot of anger and a lot of concern from citizens everywhere. Every day someone comes up to me and thanks me for putting up and pushing back on this issue. And I think to heal the rift that you've caused by how you've mismanaged this for the last 6 months, you need to ask us for the money and not just take it. We're here to work with you.
Thank you very much. Good morning.
Good morning. My name is Lightning. I represent Lightning Humanitarian Lab. On the sunset clause, as I stated at the last meeting, I'd like to see that at 3 years. I don't think going out farther is necessary at this time. Again, what I suggested is do more of a step-up plan on this whole proposal. And what I wanted originally, as I stated last week, was $25 million for year one, $35 million year two, and $45 million year three. Again, that begins the process forward. We know we need costs for transportation, so we know what we're fixed at, and we set a cap. Now, these other suggestions, again, on the gas tax, I wanted that to be more of an incentive to you to try to push that through. If you want to hit your $47 million per year, you go out there and get that gas tax approved, and you calculate that from $25 million to $47 million. That's your incentive each year to get that done. If we're looking at other areas also, which again, I think this gentleman on the parking sticker fee, I do want more studies to be provided. I talked to him briefly. He said, it's your responsibility to provide those studies. Somebody needs to provide those studies. I think it's a great area to look at. Again, when we're calculating a step-up plan for the first 3 years, and again, that sunset clause determines who's going to get reelected also in the next few years, and we're going to be looking at this very close, and we're adjusting that price to see how much you're going to follow through on that gas tax, how much you'll follow through on possibly this sticker fee, how much you'll follow through maybe on PERS, Social Security, other avenues to raise more revenue. But you'll have that 3 years. You'll get reelected if you perform. If you don't, you won't get reelected, as you stated. And that's my opinion, is that we need to set this up with more incentives from your side to perform, but we need to come through with something now to get the process moving forward, because we could debate on this for the next 1 to 2 years, and we're already drawing a lot of time on this. So from my position again, I want that sunset clause reduced to 3 years, and I don't want that extended out. And your election will be dependent upon this overall plan and proposal going through and you implementing either the gas tax or some other forms of revenue. And again, and I'll make this clear, Mr. Novick, in charge of the transportation, I don't think the mayor should not get reelected on anything to do with the Bureau of Transportation if this comes unraveled. You are in charge of that. You are the commissioner. If it becomes unraveled, it's your responsibility at the end of the day, not the mayor's. Thank you.
Thank you. Thanks very much.
I just want to share something that dawned on me, and it should have dawned on me much earlier, and that is that we won't actually be collecting any revenue until 2016 under the current proposals. So we would, if we were to have a sense that there were, so the money starts getting collected in 2016, it would be unrealistic to expect all of the projects to be done immediately, even if we got all the money on April 15th of 2016.
Okay, but if I can answer that, is that on these other type of fees, the parking fee type structure, the gas tax, or any other type of revenues, my understanding is that we'll begin to get that into place to have it implemented upon the proposal dates. So I do understand that, but we still need to move forward as we're doing on this whole proposal to make sure that we can meet those dates and come up with the revenue that we need